Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast. I'm A.D. Packham and we have our fire extinguishers at the ready in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday, a back-to-basics performance saw us leave Bramall Lane with a point. It was a setup that surprised Blades boss Chris Wilder, who said post-match that the Albion have a reputation of being soft. Attention now turns to the big one. Putting the rivalry aside, this would be a big game regardless, with both sides desperate for the points and with us looking for our first win of 2020. The women's team warmed us up by beating them 3-0 midweek in the Women's FA Cup, and let's hope that the Palace's issues with the Sussexes continue today.
Very good!
Joining me today is, of course, you just heard him, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome a raw virgin. We always like those.
It's just the way he walks.
Yeah. In the shape of the Argus's newest new recruit into the sports team, it is Adam Stenning. Welcome to the show, Adam. How you doing?
Yeah, good. You guys?
Yeah, that was a very nervous laugh when Ada called you a raw virgin. Are you okay, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely right.
The door is over there if you need it. Don't worry. Ada will not chase you.
Just a little daylighting upon magic here. We're recording this on Friday night, obviously, because if you listen to this live, why aren't you at the Amex, frankly?
Exactly, there is that.
But this is the second time that Adam's been in this building today. Tell us why, Adam.
Well, me and my girlfriend are having a baby, so I was here earlier. We were having a scan, so
Adam,
I thought it was the second
medical
time.
Medical science will not allow that statement. It's your girlfriend's having a baby. You were just there at the beginning, right at the very beginning.
Well, but anyway, yeah, go on then.
How is everything then?
Yeah, no, good. Yeah, perfectly crystal clear. Little boy on the way.
Don't say that word. Don't say crystal.
It.
Please don't say crystal in this studio. But fantastic. Well, good luck with it all. Hope it goes well. When Junior arrives, just don't think of us winning naming rights.
But as is tradition for our Raw Virgins here, tell us a little bit about yourself and your Albion supporting history.
Apart from the fact he's going to be a dad.
apart from the dad, supporting history, my dad took me to my first game, was March 2007, and we went up to Northampton and we watched Bass Savage score a brace. Needed the moonwalk right in front of us. We
fantastic.
Were at the top of the away end.
Do the moonwalk.
Sounds like a lot of old cobblers to me.
Sounds like a t-shirt to me.
Yeah.
That was that really on me. That was my first game. And then I think we had season tickets a couple of seasons later. And then we just never stopped.
So that would have been, 2008, something like that?
No, you just said 2007.
2007 was the first game. And then I think we've got season tickets from about 2009-10 season.
So we used to have people coming in here being kind of old and smelly and sort of smelling of WD-40 and humbugs and everything like
Speak
that.
Speak for yourself.
The point would be is that when we've said, oh, tell us about your first Albion supporting memory, it's usually with an orange box on the East Terrace, and now you're saying it's 2007, which is even in the second half of our tenure into With Dean, which means that basically, AD, we've got a babby in today, haven't we? We've got, and I appreciate, it's the Argus needs new blood and everything like that, and it's fantastic, but 2007. Now, there's one of two things here. You are either a babby or you're a late arriver. So, come on, Adam, which is it? You're a babby, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a babby.
You're a babby.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So, in all that time, and we were talking 13 years here since you were first sort of blooded. Then, in that time,
how many times did you get pleurisy with Dean?
Well, like I say he hardly went. He was just off the bottle at the time. So of all those 13 years, who is your all-time favourite Albion player that you have seen play?
Oh, that's a tough one, actually.
Is it?
I don't know. I used to love sort of no-nonsense players.
So Charlie Oatway, something like that.
Yeah, Adam Allab, people like that just stick their foot in and get involved. I didn't like people that sort of...
AD, I'm aging you here, mate. Listen, he said 2007. That's post Charlie Oatway.
Christ.
That would have been Adam Allab, though, right in there. Yeah,
okay. Gordon Greer. You like sort of Lewis Dunk in the early days.
You know,
a red card waiting to happen.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Fine.
I just loved Adam Allab because he got involved with everything. You just put your foot in wherever you like. And that's how I moulded my footballing career, and it's gone horribly wrong. So I probably shouldn't have followed that sort of advice.
Well, apparently, he's my favourite player, if you believe the Wanna Stadium announcement with Dean.
Oh, yes. Can I just tell you a wee little story? It probably actually goes back to about that time. I seem to recall it was your 37th birthday, and Marcus decided to tell Paul Samra that it was your 7th, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was the Stadium. Oh, those jolly japes from those days. So your first game was seeing Bass Savage score a couple at... So hang on, so your first game, if it was at the Sixfields, what was your? Do you remember your first with Dean game?
Oh, I think that must have been... It might have been the next season. I can't think who it was, though. But I know it was the next season. It was just after that.
So what made your dad grab you up to take you up to Northampton? I mean, did he hate you at the time or something then? Or?
No, I think we had some. I think he had some workmates going who were driving up, and they'd got us tickets.
Got you.
So he just said, "Well, might as well take him to his first game now."
Right.
And I thought, "Well, I didn't really know where I was going, to be honest, at that age. I just went, and it was a day out. I quite enjoyed it, and that was that, really." So
what are your memories of the day? I mean, apart from Bass Savage.
I think it was the day that John Terry got knocked out, got kicked in the head. I think it was that day.
We'd have remembered that day, but yeah. I don't remember that.
Or something like that.
Sure, it wasn't Marcus Painter.
Yeah, same difference.
No, because it was on the radio on the way home one of the other games. I can't remember. I don't know who Chelsea were playing that day, but I just remember something about John Terry getting knocked out and he had to go to hospital. Turned on the radio.
So it wasn't Petr Cech.
No, it wasn't. No, I think it was John Terry.
Fair enough.
I remember hearing John Terry down the radio.
Okay, well, fast forward to now then. Obviously, you're now, you've joined the sports team at the Argus with Brian Owen and Mike Legg, etc. Yeah. I mean,
So how long have you been at the Argus? Were you up at Hollingbury?
No, I wasn't up at Hollingbury. Oh, right. So I started in July last year. So
okay. how did you get that gig?
Well, I'd been at uni, so I'd done 3 years sports journalism degree at University of Brighton, and then I'd been doing some sort of non-league stuff for Leggy, so I sent in some match reports of like Whitehawk and people like that, and then I'd get a byline in the paper, you know, they'd get Whitehawk covered, so they didn't mind that way. And then I saw that Andy Naylor was leaving, and I thought, well, I'll put in an email, see if there's going to be any jobs going or anything.
Sure.
So I put in an email to Leggy, and he went, well, I don't know, he said you'll have to contact the editor. Then the next day I was in the office having an interview.
Fantastic.
And then I did 4 trial shifts, and from there I got the job, and that's the rest of history.
So when you were putting a copy in from, say, Whitehawk or Lewis, whoever it was, where you might have turfed off, did you turn up as an individual just putting in copy, or did they ask you to do it? Did you get expenses or anything like that?
No, you don't really get expenses or anything. You just literally, you turned up. I did it on my phone, actually. I used to type it up on my phone as you go in, standing over the railings, typing.
So you went in as an individual?
Yeah, just went in as an individual.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I did it as a bit of experience to go in my portfolio book for the end of my degree, and then I've got a range of different sort of publications.
Because even now, you love a bit of non-league, don't you? So.
Oh, yeah, no, I love a bit
of
non-league.
You make it sound racy and naughty, don't you? Oh, I love a bit of non-league. Yeah, give me Whitehawk any day.
I'll tell you what, Tuesday night's going to be a little bit tasty. I've got no idea who to support.
Well, hang on, which way? What's happening on Tuesday?
On Tuesday night, it's the FA, it's the Sussex Senior Cup semi-final at Lancashire. Between Worthing and Brighton.
Yeah.
Well, hang on. I cannot believe you just said you can't work out who to support here. I mean, Worthing is just sort of like a nice little sort of mistress on the side, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, but then. So, hang on. You're talking about your first love over your mistress, aren't you?
Well, this is true. But, I mean, I from a romantic point of view, I think it would mean a lot more to Worthing than it would to Brighton to get to the final, basically.
There's a touch of that. And I can't help feeling that the Culver Road is going to be a little bit... busy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be brilliant.
Do you remember what happened last year?
Localised fog.
Yeah. I will put these pictures up, but we went to see, was it Burgess Hill against Hayward's Heath?
Burgess Hill v Hayward's Heath,
yeah. Because one of the teams was wearing blue and white stripes, and it threw me completely. And there was
that Hayward's Heath.
Yeah, and it was this really bizarre weather where there was fog across Culver Road. Now, if anyone's been to Culver Road at Lancing, or if anyone's been to the Dripping Pan, you know just how cold it is. Even on a scorching hot summer's day, it's a cold place. But it was a still night, a very cold night, very crisp winter's night. But there was times when the fog would rise from the ground to about 10 feet in the air and then almost flatten out. And nature doesn't work in straight lines. And almost flatten out. So you couldn't see anything. It was something like something out of The Shining. And then 5 minutes later, it's completely reversed. And the pitch up to, from the pitch up to the to about 10 feet, is completely clear. And above that is this, you know, the cloud ceiling has got to there.
And Hayward's Heath had a man mounting playing up front for him. You could not see, you could only see his top half.
Yeah.
You couldn't see his legs.
It was
the fog would move, and then you could only see his legs. So, I mean,
if anyone listening to this wants to, I've still got the pictures on my phone. It is totally, well, you were there, weren't you, Aidy?
Yeah,
it was bizarre.
It was Okay, I was talking about.
Getting back to non-league here. So you didn't. You go to Whitehawk under your own steam, having to pay your own £12 or whatever it is, and file your own match report. Yeah. Just because you are kind of in the first instance that mad keen on just going to see some non-league football.
Yeah, it was just going down there to do some non-league football, and then you know I thought while I was at the game I'll do a match report, and then I used to put it up on my blog, and then you know if the Argus wanted it they could have it, or anyone wanted it they could have it. Really, I just
you need a better agent, mate, because you know you're supposed to be paid. You know, there's an NUJ rate here. You know,
Okay, well, let's move it on to some league football then. And the Albion were back in action last Saturday with a return from the winter break. There was a lot of excitement leading into this one, which
was
kind
there?
Of... because, I mean, we hadn't played for ages. McAllister was going to make his debut. It had Lamptey waiting in the wings. And then the team selection came, and the team came out, and everyone went, And it was like...
What made you think that Lamptey and McAllister were going to play, especially as Potter made no reference to them specifically starting?
I will go to my learning colleague. Basically, he was very good at misdirection in his presses leading up to this, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he sort of sold the dream of... He was sort of bigging up McAllister a bit, and then I don't know if he was trying to send the press the wrong way, as into he's starting, but actually I know he's not starting, you know what I mean? So I think he sort of bigged him up, and everyone seemed to be asking questions because he seems to be the man that everyone wanted to know about, the unknown sort of quantity coming in and that sort of thing. And then, you know, as you say, a build up for team news, even we were bigging him up like, oh, he's going to be involved at some point. And then we saw the team sheet and went, right, okay, he's not involved.
Let me just ask you about this in your role at the Argus these days, because I've turned up for the broadcast media. Yeah. You know, we turned up with the recording equipment to play out the interviews if necessary. But you're there as part of the mainstream media for the press conferences, and these press conferences always get a given amount of time. So, talk us through what happens to those who obviously, you know, the vast majority who've never been there. How, who, when, why, what happens at these press conferences?
Well, usually you turn up, probably about midday on a Thursday, you turn up at the training ground there.
At Lancing.
At Lancing, at the training ground there at the Performance Centre. And you have, I think about half an hour later or something around there, you'll have the player. So I'll go off with a couple of others and we'll do a player of the Brighton part for us.
Right.
Who will then be... embargoed till usually the day of the game.
Sure.
So that'll be all material for that.
So when you say a player, is it as in this is someone who they're going to feature, or this is someone who the club have put up?
Yeah, this is someone that the club put forward for you, so that you ask them, you know, like the day before or so, on the Wednesday I'll say,
okay,
who's the player tomorrow, and then they'll come back with, I don't know, it's Davey Proper at this time. And
okay.
Then, you know, that's when you get there for, and then...
So you can at least prep your questions.
Yeah,
then.
So you can sort of prep your questions and do a bit of research on whoever you're doing. Uh-huh. And then manager's press conference is basically sort of you go in there, Potter comes in, sits down at the big table, and then sort of must be about first 10, 15 minutes you've got a range of broadcast journalists. So you usually have somebody like Sky kick off your coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go on to somebody like PLP.
That's Premier League Promotions.
Yeah, Premier Productions. League Productions,
So you have a kind of a almost like a sliding scale. You have a pecking order as to who goes first with their questions.
Yeah, you sort of have a particular running order. So Sky always get first dibs, then PLP and the next biggest, so they go. Then you go on to your local radio, BBC Sussexes or something like that. And then you go, then sort of the cameras are all turned off and you go into your written section.
So what if, say, for instance, it's the game like the last home game of the season last season where Brighton are playing Manchester City. Man City could well win the title. You know, obviously, we know they did. Is that when you get the foreign press turn up as well? And if that's the case, then is there a pecking order for them as well?
Well, yeah, you probably do. I mean, I didn't really see it last season because I wasn't involved with the Argus, but I'm assuming there would have been. There was quite a lot of foreign press. I remember I was actually, I think I tried to get in for the Man City game, but... as you can imagine, the press box was absolutely swarmed when I was doing it for one of the websites I was doing it for. So,
I mean, Man City, they have a lot of foreign press coming. I mean, I was doing the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley, and I was sat next to this guy from the Catalan press, and he was there specifically following Pep.
Yeah.
And obviously, here he had a big interest on Martin Montoya, and it was fascinating.
How was your Catalan?
My Catalan was about as good as my English.
Oh dear, that
so,
bad.
Yeah. Okay, well, back to the Sheffield United game then. So, I mean, basically, it was Morpai partnered Glenn Murray up front for the first time since the 14th of September. Is that a surprise, do you think, Adam?
I think it was maybe a slight surprise that they went with the two up top. But I think once you saw how Sheffield United started the game and that Albion weren't going to get an awful lot of that ball in the first... They didn't really get the ball much in the first sort of 20 minutes. Mm. They've struggled to touch it. It seemed that, I think, you know, the idea was probably launch it up to Glenn, you know, yeah, as an option, and then he'll bring it down and then Mapei can run off him and, you know, sort of work his magic from that way. And that it did sort of work in a way, actually, because it relieves pressure sometimes, just lumping it up.
Yeah. I mean, Sheffield United, they've a lot of their success this season has come because of their high press.
Yeah.
And basically, the team was set up to basically pretty much bypass our midfield to counteract it so they couldn't press.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we had a lot of joy out of doing that, didn't we?
Yeah, no, we did. I think... as I say, I think launching it up to Glenn and that just relieved a bit of pressure and sort of it also, against those very physical centre-halves, you know, somebody like Mapei and Connolly are going to get knocked left, right and centre, whereas, you know, Murray can sort of stay on his feet, try and sort of work it about.
Glenn Murray, stay on his feet?
Yeah. Give as good as he gets, really, sort of in the physical department. And then, as I say, you let Mapei run off and do what he wants to do off the ball with it. He can either then... pick it up and run off with it, or you know he can then make his runs elsewhere. You know, so that it sort of relieved pressure in that way. But I think they sort of maybe knew going into it was going to be a very tough game, and you were just going to have to get what you could out of it.
Yeah, I mean, we also saw Bissouma come back in as well. He actually did okay.
Yeah. I mean, first 10 minutes, I thought he was auditioning for the quickest sending off ever because he was just fouling people left, right and centre. And even when he was on a yellow card, I thought, does he realise he's on a yellow card? And then he sort of slowly, gradually got more into the game and started having a bit of an impact on it, which he seems to do.
Bissouma is one of those characters who will start a game, whether he comes on as a sub or whether he starts a game, he'll start... There is an element of headless chicken about him. It's like he's trying too hard before someone, I think, it's almost just puts a hand on his shoulder and says, look, calm down a bit, whatever it is in French. Just, you know, calm down a bit and play your game, because, I say, he does start off like a fellow with his tail on fire sometimes.
But what did you make of Sheffield United? I mean, we saw them at the... Amex.
They weren't plucky little Sheffield United, mate. They're in fifth place.
Well, actually, to be fair, there is an element of first season Bournemouth about them, though, isn't there? Bournemouth. I mean, if you look at the way that Bournemouth got promoted, I mean, obviously, we're not going to talk about that because of libel. But it's they came up largely with a team that was with them in the first division in League One. And went through the Championship into the Premier League, and they kept faith with a lot of those players, Steve Cook being a classic example, Tommy Elphick as well. And they kept faith with a lot of those. And again, with Sheffield United, again, it's a team that was, a lot of them were with them in League One and up for the Championship. And again, they're keeping faith with them in the Championship, so in the Premier League, sorry. So there are parallels there.
Yeah, there are, I think, slight similarities in the sort of journey they've had. But I mean, Sheffield United have just been immense. They've just, that togetherness they've got in the squad, they sort of know each other inside out, know each other's games, know what one another are going to do. And I mean, they've got some fabulous players in there. I mean, Ollie Norwood's a classic example of, you know, he had his time in and out that Brighton side. But it's good to actually see him getting some game time and really... You know, show him what he can do, because he is a quality player when he gets going.
I always really liked Ollie Norwood here, and I didn't think he got the right opportunities, but and he never let us down.
In a season that had Stevens, Kyle, Sidwell, you know, it was always going to be limited.
But, I mean, is it one that got away?
It's hard to say that. I think you look at it now, you've still got, you know, Stevens is still there. Would we have got Proper then? You never know. You never know what would have happened if Ollie Norwood would have stayed. But I mean, Proper's been obviously a good addition.
Okay.
you know, and has formed that solid partnership, and, you know, there's still people.
Okay, well, just somewhere down the line, Ollie Norwood is the sort of player that Chris Wilder wants at Sheffield United to play in the team that he wants to have play with them. I mean, it's, I'm not trying to be too cynical here or too harsh, but you're saying yourself, you know, it's a team that bypasses, you know, the midfield, and this is the midfielder and the captain. So you think, well, hang on, what are you saying here? You know, it's... And, well, of course, that's not the case.
I'm talking about artists, I'm not theirs.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no, I mean, he's the fellow that holds it all together, and we knew he could do that. Mm. It's just, like I say, I think we had preferences, you know, in that season that we went up, and just rightly or wrong. Let's put it this way, he spent another 2 years in the Championship before finally, and, you know, quite rightly now being a Premier League player, so he has spent those extra 2 years effectively learning his trade a bit more than he ever did at the Albion.
Mm. Okay, well, Sheffield United, they did open the scoring, and it was a short corner routine that saw the them cross into the box. Dan Burn headed clear as far as end of season, Ender Stevens, who beat Ryan at his near post. Now, when a keeper gets beaten at the near post, you're always going to
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm not criticising him. He's well in credit with me at the moment. So,
That ball was passed him before he even saw it.
And I think that was in the way. Superb strike. You can't, you know, when those leave the boot, you know they're going in.
Yeah.
It just was inch perfect when you saw it on the replay.
I think that Ryan was partially unsighted by Dunk trying to throw himself at it. So by the time by the time the ball got past Dunk, then, you know, it's almost the same freeze frame.
React, yeah.
The next freeze frame, it's first freeze frame, it's on the 6 yard line. The second one, it's in the back of the net.
Is there question marks over the defending? I mean, Stevens was completely lonely there.
Well, that was a deliberate thing. What would you be doing with a defender that far out?
Yeah,
defending that fella there. I mean, we're shades of Izquierdo when he scored against West Ham. You know, ball gets crossed in from the corner, headed away. There he is to go and pick it up. Smashes it home. Any defensive textbook manual would say you don't waste the defender out there.
Yeah,
by all means nearby-ish, but not that far out.
Well, the first person to him trying to close down the shot was Dan Burn, whose header it was. So, I mean, it was... I've got question marks about it. I just think we turned off from the short corner. And, like,
In as much as, yes, there was only one person doing two. That wasn't very good.
And, like, and if you look at the position of our players in the box at that particular moment, there was a big cluster of them. And, basically, Stevens was there on his own. And there was nobody anywhere near him. I mean, it was completely lonely.
Yeah, but
that's box at a corner.
That's my point. It was kind of right on the very corner of the penalty box before the ball eventually got to him. He came and sorted it. But like I say, any defensive manual will tell you that you don't. Don't forget, they were nominally still defending a corner. Mm.
Yeah.
Not one that came straight in. No, you wouldn't have a defender right out on the area with looking out for that bloke.
Disagree, but
there's nothing to disagree about, because that's not no training manual would ever tell you that. It just isn't there. You stick someone right out there. No, you
have
them in the middle where the goal is.
Training manual? So apart from one they used to get in at school with the little diagrams.
Why would you waste a defender out there? Why would you? Because your first point is to defend the goal.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I'm just. It doesn't matter. I mean, with Sheffield United, the way they play, all of their players are interchangeable. So they're centre backs and wingers, and they're centre backs and centre forward. So you're saying, oh yeah, but he's a defender.
No, it's not. I didn't say that at all. No way did I say that at all. What I'm saying is that there is an attacking player who is in the middle. He's almost out of the game completely. If that ball had got crossed in and headed away and booted into touch, that player has absolutely nothing to do with anything. Mm. It's just that it got defended away to the back post where he was there to pick it up. Not every club does that. Not every team does that. By all means, have someone who is on the... effectively would have been on the far post to run out. It's interesting you say it was Dan Burn was the first one to run out. Then whoever was actually on the... what we will call the far post, which became the near post... to run out, then
so
where were they?
What you're saying is it was a clever move by Sheffield United. You're giving them the credit.
Oh yeah, totally. Good. Okay. 100% that.
Okay, well, let's give us some credit then, because the lead did not last long, much to the commentators' disdain at the time, which was great news. And Bissouma was fouled just over halfway. Aaron Moy took the free kick, angled towards the apex of the 6 yard box.
It was a touch of the championship
across,
about it, wasn't it?
And Morpay finished that off with his first goal in 9 games.
It was a touch of the championship about it. I think that if I was a Sheffield United fan, I'd be pretty cheesed off with that defending. Not so much the first header. I mean, we're just talking about.
But
giants.
No one ever defends it there, Al.
Sorry?
No one ever defends at that point, Al. Don't worry. Move on. Yeah, go on. You were saying?
Yeah, I mean, it was whoever it was that won the header. I mean, if we do have three people
it was
over.
Webster.
Okay, so we've got three people over 6 foot plus. You know, they win the header, fine. It's just that Mopai was kept onside by someone who wasn't marking. He was marking thin air.
Yeah.
Whoever the number five was, I can't think off the top of my head. But basically, Mopai wasn't really picked up.
No.
And if the number five had stayed put, Mopai might have been offside. Probably not. But, you know, let's put it this way. If the boot was on the other foot, I'd have said that was such poor defending. Mm. But, hey, Mopai's there as a six-yard sniffer. Great.
Okay. Adam Mopai's first goal in nine, since his goal against Crystal Palace back in December.
Yeah.
Monkey off his back?
Yeah, no, I think it was... I was speaking to him after the game and he sort of said how much of a relief it was to get back on the score sheet and, you know, break that duck, because I think he sort of said, you know, there was pressure on him. He was actually quite honest in saying maybe he wasn't as clinical with his chances he'd like to have been in those.
I think we've been saying that on
games.
The Roar, actually, haven't we?
Yeah, he wasn't. He said like sometimes he doesn't catch it right or the keeper makes a good save, and you know, a mixture of those.
I was about to say, I'll go for the former myself.
Yeah, I think it was more the first one. And his I think that's what he was aiming at. So right. That he wasn't.
Well, if he was aiming at it, he still missed. Still end up in Rose.
Yeah. So I think it was just that he wasn't clinical enough, but he was honest about it and, you know, sort of owned up.
Well,
it was
can he do something about it? I mean, he really couldn't miss that chance that he did take, that he did score.
Well, it was a great run. It was
He made the right... Listen, we've said before, his approach play, and I'm talking about Connolly, I'm talking about him, I'm talking about even Murray sometimes. You know, their approach play is really good.
Yeah.
It's their finishing has been woeful. Now, the run to pick up the loose header, to pick up the one header was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb. Don't get me wrong, Sheffield United still should have been tighter on him, but it was a very good run. It's when he has that shot from the edge of the area, when he has that snapshot, that is just either a powder puff shot or ends up in row Z, or as, you know, as Adam is basically saying that he said, you know, I don't know what the je ne tire pas. I can't shoot.
But I mean, it was. I mean, if our finishing was better, I mean, people might have been talking about us being in contention for Europe, because it's like we've let so many leads go or not taking the chances this season, and where the performances have been so good, it's just a frustration, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, you look at games. I think the Crystal Palace away actually was a prime example where we had chances to extend that lead after we'd scored, and we wasted a couple of chances. And then, you know, Wilfried Zaha pops up with his goal, as he always does against Albion, and, you know, that was that really. And it's just those sort of things. If you are more clinical, it could be so much different for Albion at the minute.
You go to it. You go in at half time 2-0 or 3-0 up.
Yeah.
You know, it gives the other team a major problem.
Yeah.
But we're not. We're presenting teams with a get out of jail free card every time.
Well, it's a classic example. Obviously, we're playing Palace again today, and it was the...
We're playing them right now.
But the... I mean, you were with us at Selhurst Park this year, and we were coming out of the press box there down to the press room, and you go over past the tunnel where the players are coming in, and the dog's abuse that the Palace players were getting from their fans at half time in that game, because
it was pretty shocking.
If we'd have gone in, we could easily gone in 3 or 4-0 up at half time, and it would have not flattered us at all.
No, it wouldn't have. I mean, you know, that performance was probably one of our better ones away from home so far this season. They really, you know, put Palace to the sword for a good 70 minutes. And yet,
can't win.
Yeah, and yet they come away with a point. It's one of those things. It's sort of a tale of Albion's season so far. They put in these good performances and they don't get anything out of it.
There's the funny thing, and we said it at the time for the game. I still have it in mind. You know, Montoya had a lot of fun down the right-hand side and played very well alongside Aaron Moore. You had Trossard on the far side, had a lot of the ball, did absolutely nothing with it apart from, you know, that volley back in for Mopar
when
to finish
swapped
off.
Sides.
When he, for the one time he'd swapped side, apart from that, did absolutely rock all with it. He was he had a stinker for the amount of time he got. I think someone even gave him man of the match just because the amount of time he got the ball. No, you got to do something with it, and he did nothing with it.
Should have had a penalty, to be honest.
Well, we should against Palace, but just for them being Crystal Palace. But we've got to be. I mean, and the number of times we've said it on the radio this season, you know, some really good performances and just woeful shooting. And it's interesting. Your man Mopai Adam is saying that, you know, I'm partially to blame.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the only one, believe me. But
no, for sure. I mean, we're talking about.
Well, we're going to talk about David Propershaw.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah. Well, just move on then. Just before we finish on this one, there was two contentious incidents in the game. Varchek won the penalty handball.
Not a chance.
It was hard because I didn't really see it. And when you see it in full motion, you just thought, well, maybe the cross has hit him on the knee, to be honest. I didn't even see. But, I mean, Schelotto was absolutely insistent it was a penalty, and so were a few others. They were sort of insisting it was a penalty. I'm not too sure due to how close he was and stuff like that. I think, you know.
The arm's in a natural position. It was far too close. He had no chance of getting out of the way.
That's the thing,
If that's the rule, then it's never in a squillion years was that a penalty. No. I mean, you can scream all you want, but no.
I mean, far under seeing them given, though, because, I mean, this is the whole problem here.
Yeah, but it's always in the opinion of, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not black or white. And basically, how many times have we seen those given? No one seems to know what the handball
this
rule
season,
is at the
actually, this season, I can't help thinking that they've been a lot more lenient on those kind of handballs.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's been a particular glut of, you know, it's what we used to call, before VAR, we used to call it ball to hand, of which there was still no defence for it. But it's now where the statement is, you know, is the arm in a natural position? Does the arm move towards the ball, etc.? And incidentally, playing it slow motion and not in real time is no way of judging whether your hand has done so. The bloke was, you know, no more than 3 or 4 feet from Schelotto. He belted it. Yeah, it altered the course of the
it
delivery.
It stopped the ball from going into the box. And
yes, it did, but yeah.
I wouldn't be if it was against us. I would have said, okay, it's hit his hand. I mean, it's got to the point now. If it just hits your hand, it's a penalty now.
No, that's the point. No, it hasn't. Well, that's what I'm saying.
It depends. It also depends if you're an attacker or if you're a defender. It's a completely different rule.
Well, that's a different rule entirely. Yeah. That is a ridiculous one. Where we've got an accidental handball in the build-up. You're actually talking about football with two different rules.
From the defender.
Yeah, well, the rule doesn't count that way. That's what I mean. No, I think that the rule about the accidental handball from the attacking point of view, that just has to go because that's a farce. Mm-hmm. You're actually talking about two teams having different sets of rules.
I mean, VAR excelled itself last weekend, didn't it?
As much as
we love Bournemouth, you've got to feel sorry for the fans going to that lovely place that is Burnley and having.
I've got to be honest with you, I haven't seen the incident. I mean, it was. Well, just briefly for the ignoramuses.
Well, basically. They took the lead.
Bournemouth
took the lead up there, and it got chalked off for the ball coming off.
Was it handball?
No, it was his shoulder.
Shoulder, that was it. Yeah.
So basically, his shoulder isn't part of your hand; it can hit your shoulder.
Yeah.
And they disallowed it.
Yeah.
So that was Burnley. Then took the lead. Bournemouth then equalised.
Yeah.
But the goal got chalked off because there was a handball in the penalty box in the build-up.
And the other penalty box.
And a penalty got given to Burnley.
Yeah.
And again, it was arguable whether it was handball or not. So basically the goal...
So hang on. That's not specifically VAR. Yeah, that's the competence of the referee.
Well, Mike Dean. So leave it there.
Oh, was that who it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the VAR, I think Vicky
really liked him last week.
Yeah. But the VAR ref, basically they called it back twice, went to VAR, and Mike Dean, when they were coming off, he actually said to the players, "What was it for?" He said, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Hang on, who's the
I don't know who the
pitch
VAR
referee was.
Yeah, Mike Dean was on
right.
pitch.
Yeah.
Well, hang on, therein lies a point. Okay, so we're back to this argument of video assistant referee. Hang on, we've got an assistant referee, is making decisions. It's an additional referee. If a referee on the pitch doesn't know what something is given for, then it shouldn't be given.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. He needs to communicate. So and so handballed it. You need to give a penalty.
Well, it needs to go back to the pitch side screens, doesn't it?
I think you need to go over to these monitors because there was a prime example last night in the Europa League with Club Brugge and Manchester United where there was the red card given for the handball.
Right.
And while they were waiting for the penalty to be taken, the VARs checked it and said to the, you know, the referee, you need to go and look at the monitor right. and check that you actually think this is definitely a red card. So then the referee's gone to the pitch side monitor, had probably about six or seven looks at it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the most blatant handball ever. He's, right. you know, it's curling to the bottom corner and the defender's gone out like that.
He's
made a great yeah. save to put
for,
it out.
For those who weren't
corner.
Watching on Super Reverb Vision, Adam stuck his hand out to the left to mimic a great save a la Gordon Banks.
Yeah, yeah, okay. No. So, and then, as I say, he's looked at it about seven times and the, you know, the referee's gone to the VAR and said, look, you know, that's definitely a red card. Carry on.
So, yeah.
And that's what it needs to be in the Premier League. Then these yeah, are why
sure.
you have these monitors.
Anyway,
VAR check two, red card, Lindstrom on dunk.
I have absolutely no reason, no understanding as to why that wasn't a red card. He went over the top. He was late. It was studs. It was careless. All right, it wasn't both feet off the ground, but he certainly went in without due care and attention and with excessive force. I cannot for the life of me work out why that wasn't a red card.
Well, I think VAR were consistent on that one because earlier in the day you had the Chelsea-Spurs game and then you had the Lo Celso on Azpilicueta, and that was probably worse than the one that Lundstrom did on dunk was probably a lot actually right. worse than the Lo Celso one. And again, he got away without nothing. And
so we've got to work out
what
defines excessive force? What defines a red card incident in that yeah. case? Because, you know, going in with your foot up, let's put it this way, if his foot hadn't been up, it wouldn't have studded his yeah. thigh.
But it's the actual force as well. They both stamped down. It's like the stamp
have,
as
yeah.
well. That is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and Dunk clearly got the ball. He was nowhere near the Lundstrom. Lundstrom was late. He didn't pull out.
Yeah.
He was high.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. We're all saying red card?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a definite red card for me.
And listen, if Wrighty and Keown on Match of the Day say so, then yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and we have a shirt of the week for you here. I'm just going to pass this over.
Adam, would you care
have a look
to
at
try
that?
And describe that for us?
Wow, that is quite something. I mean, oh, not even. I mean, well, I've got the maker phone, Huawei.
right.
That's my phone. So, is it Australian A-League team?
Okay, just describe the colours and what you're. Tell us what you're seeing, because obviously, like I say, not everyone's watching this on Super Reverb Vision.
Yeah, well, what you've got is you've got this sort of, I'd say that's navy to me.
Right.
This sort of navy shirt, nice Adidas badge in the middle. You've got the club crest on the left hand side.
Right. Can you see what the crest is?
Oh. I wouldn't know what team that is myself.
I think that was the point we were trying to make, though.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a clue. I'd probably say it's Australian A-League, but that's about as much as I can get from the sponsoring on the
right,
on the shirt.
What does the sponsor say? It says
Hyundai A-League, which stands for the Australian
One
League.
One would assume that's Australian. So, and I just thought His Majesty's in Australia at the moment, isn't he? So I'm going to guess... When I say His Majesty, I'll refer to our fabulous sponsor, Phil Shelley. Thank you very much indeed for sponsoring us. What are you doing in Australia during the football season, you absolute fool? I'm going to guess it's a Melbourne football club.
You are incorrect.
Wow.
And you're correct on the league.
It's
wrong
league.
About the country.
It's, oh, is it a New Zealand club?
It is a New Zealand shirt. And here, and this is what Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about this particular fetching Antipodean number. He says, this is the 2015 to 2016 away shirt of Australian, yes, of course
yeah,
it is.
Close enough.
Australian A-League side Wellington Phoenix, who are based in New Zealand. They are known as the Knicks, and they play at the Sky Stadium in the city of Wellington, which has a capacity of 34,500. They share the stadium with four other sports teams. Which
really?
Is, yeah. St Kilda FC, which is Aussie Rules. The Hurricanes RFC, which are obviously, and Wellington Lions Rugby Union. And also the Wellington Firebirds, which is a T20 cricket team.
Wow. The groundsmen have got their work cut out, haven't
yeah,
they?
I know. The most local A-League sides are Western Sydney Wanderers and Sydney SC, who are a mere 1,383 miles away. That's their derby.
Yeah.
Blimey.
And,
that's about the equivalent of sort of, I don't know, us against Nicosia or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Graham Potter was saying something similar today, wasn't he, in the paper about the when he was at Ursterson, it was a long. Their nearest dark was about 500 miles away.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous, isn't it?
I bet he felt like that when he was at Swansea as well.
But it was so it's a mere 1,383 miles away, or a 3-hour flight. Obviously, no buses from New Zealand to Australia. when they play Perth Glory, the flight time is 8 hours and 50 minutes and several time zones away. They were formed in 2007 after the previous NZA League side New Zealand Knights lost their franchise due to financial issues. The current squad boasts three English players, including former Newcastle stalwart Stephen Taylor. However, the bulk of the side is from New Zealand. Atawai Hudson-Wiongi is in his first season as a defender at the Knicks, and New Zealand's first choice international goalie, Stefan Tone Marinovic, has been ever present between the sticks since his move from Bristol City
last
year.
Don't look at me, Adam. He's making this up.
To the Brighton connections. Wow, of course. Paul Everton Ifill was born in Brighton, but rather disappointingly played for the Tyre Fire up the road, and he moved from Croydon to New Zealand in 2009 and played 5 seasons for Wellington. Also, Nick Ward played 8 times for the Albion on loan from QPR in 2007, and he moved to the A-League shortly after, and amongst several others, made 44 appearances for Wellington. The Wellington Phoenix fan group is called the Yellow Fever, and each year they organise and sponsor a footballing scholarship. The recipient receives a trial with the Phoenix. Marco Rojas was one such recipient, and in 2009 he earned himself a contract and has since played in New Zealand, Australia, Germany and Holland, whilst racking up 42 appearances for the New Zealand national side. There you go. Thanks for that, Phil.
Wow. That's actually quite a handsome shirt, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it navy blue or is it black? Or is it, I mean, it's hard to tell off AD's printer, isn't it?
It's definitely a nice bit of yellow in there, I can tell that. You would certainly get spotted in that shirt, is what I'd say.
It's very much a Kemp Town sort of, like, motif shirt.
Okay, just quickly, we're going to move on to the notice board. We've got a lot of stuff on here. But I can't
remember half of it, mate.
Well, we're going to start with the first
week.
Thing. Next week. Next week, there will be no Albion Raw next Saturday because, Al?
Because there is an international women's takeover of Radio Reverb. They will be broadcasting live from the Brighton Museum for the 21st Century Inspirational Women photographic exhibition, and there will be a whole day of women's programmes on Radio Reverb. We will be shifting over to BBC Two, or Sunday as we call it, and we will be broadcasting live from 1 o'clock till 2 o'clock. As part of the Reverbathon. Now, that in itself is quite exciting, but the thing that's going to make it really exciting to the point that we're going to scare each other's pants off is that we're going to do it live in a pub. What could go wrong? So if you fancy drowning your sorrows after losing to Wolves next week, then do pop down to the Hope and Ruin. It's in Queen's Road. It's an all-day Reverbathon. We'll be broadcasting live from midday to midnight. We have no idea what we're doing just yet. I think we need to actually sit down and work this out yet, Adrian. The Reverbathon, Radio Reverb, doesn't operate off anything other than fresh air and best wishes and the odd donation and sponsorship. So if you really do feel like chucking in a few quid on the back of the Reverbathon, if you want to come down and take the mickey out of us, because if you're going to be there, you probably will anyway, and chuck us a few quid and help keep this brilliant community asset going.
And also, we are looking for show sponsors for the day.
We have two. Thank you very much indeed to David Costa of Flowers Unlimited, and thank you very much indeed also to Dan Maskell, Financial Planning.
But we're looking for more sponsors for the day. So if you can sponsor us, if your company can get behind us, please contact us at thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. Now, so Al, you've got a Rev quiz coming up as well.
I'm just thinking of anyone else maybe the evening. I'll see if they can sponsor us as well. Yes, we have the following Friday. Oh, I'm going to be busy, aren't I? It's the Reverb. No, it's not. It's the Rev quiz. Sorry. It's the Rev quiz, Friday the 13th
of
March.
The Rev quizathon.
The quizathon, yes. I better start writing it as well at some point as well. Yes, in the Mayo Wynn Baxter Lounge at the Amex. Do come along. Teams of up to six. £5 per person to enter. There'll be lots of fun, beer, pies, and now we know that we are playing Arsenal the next day rather than Sunday. It'll all be fun too. So do come along. Adam, I'm sure you can bring along a journalist's quiz team, can't you? I think Brian is coming.
I think Brian has said he's going to do it.
Oh, blimey. Well, it's about time someone else won it, looking at you, Max Kuta. Stop winning it.
I've won it.
Through the most inappropriate way of celebrating a victory, basically by dancing on someone else's table.
I did not dance on anyone else's table.
You might as well have done. It was quite funny.
It was a playoff, wasn't it? Against Max Kuta team, who's been on Mastermind.
No, it's a university challenge.
Yeah, I was going to say Master.
No, he has been on Mastermind, actually.
It's definitely not been on Masterchef. Yeah.
I was going to say wrong show. Yeah.
But anyway, so do come along to that. Don't worry about beating Max Kuta. We'll do it for you. What else is next? The Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, a two-legged challenge match this year, is April 24th. At Croydon FC, that's the first leg. Crystal Palace supporters against Brighton supporters. And the return leg, wouldn't it be exciting if it would finish 1-1 rather than 5-0 maybe? We'll be at Worthing, Woodside Road Worthing, on Friday the 15th of May. It's a fiver to get in to both games. To each game. Do come along, show your support for everyone. I'm sure there'll be the odd ringer, the odd superstar from yesteryear. We've heard nothing yet, but we are still a way out yet. We're going to get other ways of getting your money first before we go to the Renf games. 24th of April and 15th of May, the two Renf games. AD, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but can I stop talking now?
Yes, Al, you can stop talking now.
Yeah, it's a first, but you know.
But what we are going to talk about a man which is very close to my heart, because obviously I model myself on his particularly beautiful barnet.
What, Aaron Moy?
That's it, yeah. The pasty Perlo.
Go on. The roll-on deodorant.
If selected, which with a Potter side you can never guarantee, it will be Davy Purper's 100th game for the Albion today against Crystal Palace. And now I'm a big Davy Purper fan. Adam?
Well, he's one of those players, isn't he, who gets a fair bit of stick, like Dale Stevens, from fans. Especially if Brighton aren't doing very well, he seems to get a bit of stick. But I think he's hugely underrated in that side. The partnership he's formed with Dale Stevens in the middle of the park is, you know, just great. They've got that togetherness. They read each other's game very well. And I think he's shown, you know, over the past couple of seasons, he has got a few sort of passes in his locker. He showed one a few weeks ago, actually, where it's almost like a no-look pass. Just pinged it up to Trossard. Must have been about 30 yards.
A few of them have got a no-look pass, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And yeah, so... But I think the only thing that does let him down is end product sometimes. He's just not very... He just doesn't seem to be as clinical as he was for the likes of PSV and that.
Holland.
In the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands. You know.
So, I mean, obviously, you can say there's definitely a rising class between the Eredivisie and the Premier League. But at international level, he's still only got 3 goals.
One of the things that he's done that Houghton got him to do was play a lot deeper than he did for PSV or for the Netherlands. And it didn't seem to be his natural game. He seemed to be very much stifled. Now, it's not to say that Potter's let him loose to behave like a raving wild man, but when he does play that more freer role, which, to be honest, that each of the three midfield players, when they're playing, they'll have this rotation of who's going to collect the ball from the defenders, who's going to be the one who turns it over to the winger, who's going to be the one who threads the pass through. And this is where sometimes Proper can come unstuck. And we saw this in the most recent game against Watford, where this is where you miss Dale Stevens, who makes himself available quite a lot more than Proper did. And I felt that wasn't a great game for him. But when you've got, and this is kind of keeping up with Adam's point, is that when he does have Stevens together, you realise actually they're probably greater than the sum of their parts. The irritating thing is that no-look pass that we're talking about sometimes has been our undoing. Where he hasn't looked what he's doing, and he's seen that that Lewis Dunk isn't where he thought he would be. He's actually about 10 yards, you know, further to the right. And meanwhile, there's a forward going herring in, and we've just lost
the
goal.
This is the goal against Watford, isn't it?
I can think of at least one or two more. I couldn't tell you who against, but you know, the one. Let's put it this way: I'm cross enough that I can think that he's done it before. But in the great scheme of things, I still don't think we've seen the best of Davy Purper, and I do think he's an excellent player. Mm. When you say, oh, there's better to come from him, we're not talking in terms of Lacardia, we're talking in terms of Andoni or anything like that. I just think that actually Purper is an international class player that we haven't seen too many international class performances from.
He's a Rolls Royce that's still being tuned. Is that?
There's a touch of that, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think maybe...
I like that, AD.
I mean, as we're... Obviously, we've got to stay in this division first, which we're going to talk about in a second. But if we do manage to stay up, then we're going to start seeing some changes to the team. We're going to see players leave. Davey Purple is probably one that will be in demand, actually. But we're also going to see other better players come in. And do you think players alongside Purple will bring the best out of
him? If Potter wants to keep Purple, then Purple will stay. Mm. Where's he going to go? Maybe back to the Netherlands, and that's about it.
Okay. Well, we've only got 11 games left now. We are still very nervously looking over our shoulders, Adam. We've got the April from hell fixture-wise, apart from Norwich away, but even that's a gimme for Norwich, knowing the way we play. So we've really got to get these points on the board in March if we want to stay up. I mean, there's no game.
We haven't got any games in March. That's the point. They'll be in postponed. I think we've got 3 games in March. Then it's you're right. April from hell, because you know if assuming Leicester City, it's all looking a bit untidy. But I think that the point AD's making here, Adam, is that I mean, you talk to the players, you talk to Graham Potter. Have they still got it? Do they think they still got it within them to actually be okay?
Yeah, I think they keep saying. Well, I mean, speaking to Proper recently, he sort of said that, you know, they aren't ideally where they'd like to be at the minute. They thought they were going to be a lot further clear of this relegation zone than they actually are. But, I mean, I think it helps the experience they've had of being in this situation the past 2 seasons. They know what it takes to get out of this, you know, predicament they're in at the minute.
Last year.
And nearly didn't last year. But they've got these players in here who've got this experience of, you know, we can get out of these sort of situations. And, you know, it's just 1 or 2 results. If you can get 1 or 2 wins on the board somewhere... You know, maybe, or even just, you know, some results somewhere that you're not expected to get.
We need to get them quick. Because, I mean, we don't want to be at the end of the season looking back and go, oh, yeah, well, we should have beaten Newcastle, we should have beaten Aston Villa, we should have beaten Crystal Palace. I mean, where do you think these points are going to come from? And how many points do you think it's going to take to stay up this season? I mean, 36 isn't usually enough.
You never know. Who saw us getting a win at Arsenal? No. You never can tell with this sort of thing.
No.
I mean, don't get me wrong, we don't have a sniff against City or Liverpool, but, you know, there's always something to be had here.
Well, yeah. We nearly got something at Liverpool as well, though. I mean, we were brilliant in that game.
Yeah, no, we were. We were a bit unlucky in that game not to actually get something out of it. And I mean...
All did Lewis Dunk upset Clippity Klopp that day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's hard to see, looking at the run of fixtures, where the points are going to come from. I think Arsenal, I've got this funny feeling we might get something out of that, given... You know, it's Arsenal. You don't know what Arsenal are going to turn up one day from the next. You know, they proved that last night in the Europa League. Thought they were going to get through, ended up getting knocked out, you know.
Yeah, and you've got an improving Man United who've actually signed a player that actually wants to play for them.
Yeah.
We're back to the whole thing of everyone looking at the fixture list. And if you're feeling down, you think, well, we're not going to beat Newcastle. We're not going to beat anyone. We're not going to beat Halifax. We're not going to beat the WI. We're not going to beat, Sault Dean under 11s. And that's when the misery then kicks in. You actually realise that, you know, you and I have been watching the Albion for 40 years. And you get to realise that these results come from nowhere. You know, a horrible defeat will come from nowhere, but also a surprise win or a draw when you were expecting the defeat will come from nowhere.
I would just like to point out that I haven't been watching the Albion for 40 years.
Nearly.
39. Yeah, it's close enough.
It's always one, isn't it?
Okay, but I mean, how many points do you think is going to be enough this year, though?
Again, you can't tell because
you can never tell from year to year.
You seem to presume that you're Noble House, Southampton, or West Ham, or Villa, or anything.
Well, Southampton are fine.
Well, okay, whoever it might be, it seems to presume that you know how they're going. Because as much as we can't predict our games, you just think, oh, so and so's improving, therefore they'll get a result against Chelsea, or so and so's improving, therefore they could beat Liverpool.
So
you know,
basically, what you're saying. I mean, I've got a question here, but I mean, which is going to ask Adam, but I'm going to ask you instead. How many places in the bottom 3 do you think still are up for grabs? Do you think anyone...
All 3. Until such time as it's mathematical, all 3 are always up for grabs.
I think with this league, you just can't tell what's going to happen from week to week. And you mean, like, even some teams are saying, oh, we're clear of this. You're not, you know. Like, even Palace would say they might be slightly clear of this, but they're not. Easily a couple of results go the wrong way.
Newcastle easily get sucked into this as well.
Newcastle have been sucked towards that area again when they thought they were clear, and, you know.
The bottom of the Premier League almost every year, almost, not every year, but almost every year, is just as mad as the top of the championship.
Well, the whole of the championship at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay,
fine,
let's go complete basket.
Didn't West Brom go from bottom to top in one game or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And Leeds are probably are still...
Leeds, I hope, just get relegated for being Leeds.
They haven't blown it yet. The problem is with Leeds, you know, if they get promoted, even via the playoffs, story's going to be all about them next season. It's going to be sickening. It's going to be worse than Liverpool winning the league.
That's fine. Takes the pressure off us. You know, it's fine.
Okay, I mean, just before... Before we do finish, because we are running out of time here, they're talking about the Premier League going to have a Hall of Fame, and you were at the press conference. What did Graham Potter suggest?
Well, he suggested a sort of name that many Palace fans will probably be thinking of. That's probably not... It was very timely, actually, that he suggested that name with Palace coming up. I don't know if he actually meant to do that, or it was just a... It was just his nomination, but obviously he went for...
I think he is actually a Man United fan. So the fact that he went for Cantona isn't a
massive
trolling.
Surprise. But
can I just say what a stupid idea a Premier League Hall of Fame is? Because it seeks to resume... Why didn't you just call it a Hall of Fame since 1992? Because the only difference between the Division 1 and the Premier League is down to the fact that the FA threw their lot in with the top division and changed the name and threw all their money in it. Apart from that, the competition is exactly the same. So I would have the likes of Jimmy Greaves in there, or I would have Liam Brady in there, or I would have... So, you know, the whole Premier League thing... AD?
Well, I completely agree, but I can't. We've had that conversation on this show many, many times now. We know that the...
But it's a bit
the
like asking for your favourite Sun journalist, isn't it?
Well, no,
exactly.
But I mean, it's
isn't it?
No,
okay.
I couldn't name any. So
okay. Well, there is that. Okay, if we have to name a Premier... Oh God, sorry. If we have to name a Hall of Fame person, you'd like to say a Hall of Fame person from since 1992. Can we put it that way? Adam, you go first, mate.
Oh, I don't know. There's so many names I could think of.
It doesn't matter if someone else has put them in there. I mean.
Yeah,
someone that you've enjoyed watching play.
I think John Terry for me strikes it straight
out.
You
do like your nuts and bolts players.
Yeah, I do like my centre halves, particularly the ones nutters. That get involved. But I mean, you know, he's done what he needed to in the Premier League over the years he was playing. He's been
rarely made a tackle.
Well, but he's also scored a hell of a lot of vital goals, I think, for Chelsea.
And it's a good call.
Especially on European nights as well.
He made sure he was there, whether he was part of it or not.
Yeah, a John Terry header. You know, but I mean, there's other players you could throw into there. I could easily throw somebody like, you know, Wayne Rooney, people like that. There's so many names that you could just go straight to your head that just, you know, it's hard to narrow it down to.
Because I think before we came on air, we said, let's name two. So it's a gun to head. You said John Terry. Who's the other one that you would nominate?
I think actually Wayne Rooney, because no one's actually not a lot of people have said him, and I think he has, you know, given what he's done at the Premier League, he's done it international level as well for England, and you know, he's won everything that there needs to be won, and he's now, you know, doing an arguably a good job for Derby in the Championship.
Adrian,
Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah, I know.
But if we go talk, obviously, I mean, if you talk the whole history
Hall
of the
of
first
Fame
division,
since 1992.
If I'm going to talk about a player that I've probably enjoyed watching the most, would probably be Dennis Bergkamp, actually.
Yeah, he is one of those who, on his day, well, not just on his day, most of the time, he was brilliant. Apart from when the red mist descended. I was actually talking to my boss, who's a Gooner, and obviously has watched him a hell of a lot. He said, you know, just brilliant magic, you know, just on a different level. Apart from when he's having a really bad game and he is a walking red card, which becomes an actual red card. And we're talking about flying elbows, we're talking headbutts, we're talking, you know, if he's going to get sent off, he'll do it in style.
Okay.
And your second one?
David Beckham.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to go for Ben Thatcher and Jason McAteer. There you go.
That's a very noble...
Thank you.
Jason McAteer. I bet he never thought he was going to get mentioned on the Albion Roar. Blimey.
Yeah.
And on that note...
Yeah, well...
that's all we've got time for this week. So thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, we're not on air next Saturday. We will be live from the Hope and Ruin next Sunday. So that's on Radio Rehab and in person. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Raw. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.